It's 8:01, and part of me that, I mean, all of me currently lives in Washington Heights, so I'm already itching to get going, so if you'll excuse me. Today we're going to discuss maintaining Stam. And the main thing, actually, I was contacted by the person who's in charge of maintaining your Sifrei Torah here in the Shul. His name escapes me at the moment. He told me, you have to be sure when you're discussing maintaining Stam, the most important thing you have to tell everyone is that when they get an aliyah, they shouldn't take their tzitzis, touch the Sefer Torah, press down and swipe. He said there was actually, in the shul here, there was a case that an entire column of the Sefer Torah got pusel because somebody actually had an aliyah, and he swiped it hard with his tzitzis, and there went the column. So anyway, so either just touch the place where the Leila starts lightly with her tzitzis. I mean, I've seen Rabbanim who don't kiss the Sefer Torah at all, or they kiss it on the side. They don't even touch the Ksav at all with its tzitzis. That's probably preferable. Also, if you're laning, there's the issue with the Yad, that you shouldn't press it too hard over the letters. Although, I mean, if it touches it lightly, it shouldn't be the end of the world. But again, the ink can and does flake off, so if you're in a position of touching the actual text of a Sefer Torah, certainly don't press on it too hard. Also, he told me to discuss issues when you get Hagbah, that you shouldn't, when you roll the Sefer Torah and when you finish lifting it, you shouldn't, you should make sure the klaf is lifted up, not squeezed on the Eitz Chaim vent. Also, don't wrap the gartel too tight. Yeah, I haven't seen that too much, but I mean, just in general, it's common sense. Make sure the Sefer Torah isn't abused. Make sure its klaf is in the condition that it's supposed to be. One thing that was actually one of the pet peeves of my Rosh Yeshiva in Israel, Rav Ilson, is that he discovered a lot that after Simchas Torah dancing, the Sefer Torah actually had sweat damage because the sweat soaked. I mean, I guess Yeshiva Bachrim are dance more heartily than most people. Actually, the sweat soaked through the mantle of the Sefer Torah and damaged the klaf. So from that day on Simchas Torah, I actually had them put plastic garbage bags over the Sefer Torah for the dancing on Simchas Torah. A little bit strange, but what?
Put a towel on the
buffer, that seemed about right, yeah. So again, if you see it's on Simchas Torah and you see that you're getting particularly sweaty, perhaps refrain from that hakafa until you have a chance to change shirts or something. Just also common sense, keep a Sefer Torah away from heat, cold, water. I heard a story actually in one of my classes in YU, my practical rabbinic classes, that there was built a shul and they made it out of stone. The sanctuary was, all the walls were made of stone. So they thought they would save on heating and cooling costs when there's no one in the shul, and they would just turn off the climate control completely. So then they realized that during certain seasons of the year, the walls would actually sweat. It'd be very bad for the Sefer Torah, so there went their money-saving architecture. And they actually had to keep the climate control on at all times in the shul. But again, just to make sure that no moisture beads form on the klaf. This klaf that we use nowadays, looking back to the first year where I discussed the different ways we make klaf nowadays, as opposed to the times of the Gemara, where in the times of the Gemara is actually tanned leather, which changes the chemical structure of skin and makes it impervious to rotting, basically. So nowadays that we just use parchment, which is just preserved and not really tanned, it's much, much more highly susceptible to water damage than it was in the times of the Gemara. So if you would take this, say for tar, for example, and soak it in water, like happened in Hurricane Sandy in places like Seagate, Sefer Torah unrolled completely all over the benches of the shul, not personally in pictures, but they got completely ruined because the klaf warped, wrinkled, could even be completely dissolved in certain places. So water is the big enemy of Stam. When you're being the Baal Kori and reading from the Sefer Torah.
Stamin, the word stamin.
Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzahs, articles of Jewish scribal arts.
It's like an acronym.
Okay. Yeah. So, you just check, you know, it's kedai to make sure all the words are there. Even a computer check won't catch everything all the time necessarily. I mean, there's extremely, extremely low margin of error for a modern computer check. But still, keep your eye out for things. The spacing of words, that's something the computer doesn't always check for. You see words seem to be improperly spaced. There's too much space. It looks like one word looks like two words, or two words look like one word. That should be fixed immediately. There could be broken letters also. That the Baal Kore, the Achrayus of the Baal Kore partially to check for such things. So if you're interlaning here, just keep in mind that it's one of your jobs. If you have a Sefer Torah that has not been computer checked, it's imperative to do so immediately, because really, although halachically speaking, they didn't have computer checks for thousands of years, the first 3,000 years of the existence of the Sefer Torah. But still, nowadays, there's also people have become less diligent because they rely on the computer, and there have been many, many problems found. So if there's any Sefer Torah in the shul that you know has not been computer checked, you should probably, even though it's been a while since it was purchased, should go about doing that. Although your Sefer Torah caretaker seems to be on top of things, like I said, so I assume that's not a problem. I'm not going to really go into this now, but he also wanted me to mention that some of the older Sefer Torah in the shul have special features to them. They have, they used to be a mesorah for certain letters being a little bit different from normal for special emphasis, and tagim, little crowns in special places other than just the Shatnez Gates letters, which always have tagim, as we discussed in the first year. So there's sometimes you'll see a pay that looks like, instead of just a point inside of it, it's actually a little swirl, or even sometimes it looks like a second pay inside the first pay. It's hard to draw. I mean, it's hard to visualize without looking at it, but I should have brought a picture. But if you want to look in one of these older Sefer Torah, you could see that. But the Mesorah for this is not so clear. So we know most Sofrim don't do it nowadays, but there is a movement trying to restore this also. Mezuzahs. How should you take care of your mezuzahs? Like I said, water is the enemy of contemporary klaf. Yeah.
The first time when you showed us the idea on that Tzach ink, you took the entire klaf into the water of that mezuzah and
especially.
Right, and special klaf. I'm going to go into that.
But that was the klaf also.
100%. I'm going to go into that in 1 second. You have in mind exactly what I want to talk about. So, a lot of the times when people go to check their mezuzahs, a lot of the problems will be found in the outdoor mezuzahs, whose cases have not been properly sealed against water. So, that's one of the major pitfalls of mezuzahs, is that if you are going to have regular klaf and ink in your outdoor mezuzahs, then it's kedai to make sure the case is sealed very well. Of course, another option is my little invention that you saw in the first year, which I like to call waterproof mezuzahs, where if you combine using Dior LeNetzach, which is a waterproof ink, with actual tanned klaf or gvil, which is the whole skin of leather, the way they used to write mezuzahs in the times of the Gemara, then you have yourself a waterproof mezuzah. So, as far as I know, there's no one who combined the two things. There are people who are touting the Gemara-style klaf, and there are people who are touting the Dior LeNetzach. So this is my little chap that if you combine the two, you can make a mezuzah completely waterproof. So I didn't invent the klaf, I didn't invent the ink, so I don't know. Saran wrap. Things get through saran wrap. You'd be surprised, yeah.
So you do it that way and you can do it without the case.
Yeah, in theory. I mean, again, I wouldn't recommend soaking it in water forever. The klaf will get warped at the very least. It might not get pustled, but it's not ideal to keep it in that condition. So if you're in the market for new outdoor mezuzahs or even indoor mezuzahs, because they're going to last for a very long time, much more durable than regular, so consider waterproof mezuzahs. It might be a very good investment. Yeah?
Couldn't you just get a case that is sealed against water?
Yeah, but it's not...
Like wrap the case. case and like some kind of wrap?
Yeah, absolutely. You could. You do. They do make waterproof cases, certainly. But if you get the mezuzah itself to waterproof, why not? Yeah, I mean, it's better halachically also, according to you get more opinions because you make it basically the same way as they did in the times of Chazal themselves. Yeah.
I understand you're supposed to check your tefillin every 7 years. How often are you supposed to check the mezuzahs in this day and age?
Okay, we're going to get to tefillin in a few minutes, but mezuzahs, that's the next article on my list. The Gemara in Yoma says that you check the mezuzah twice in every 7 years.
Twice
every 7 years. So the poskim assume that that means once every 3.5 years. You don't get to just choose any time that you feel like. You can't check it, you know, once in the first year of the seven and once in year two and then be good for the rest of the seven. They assume it means once every 3.5 years. Now, I'm going to let you in on a few dirty little secrets of Sepharis that most people don't want you to know. Okay, that might be an extreme way of phrasing it, but there are post-game who hold, this is a matter of dispute, so ask your local Orthodox rabbi who thankfully is right here, so you could ask him. There are post-game who say that nowadays that indoor conditions are much more controlled and that people wrap the mezuzahs in saran wrap tightly, which again might not completely protect against the elements if you just put it that way outside, but a mezuzah completely wrapped in saran wrap and put in an indoor case nowadays, I think Rav Shlomo Zalman, I just saw him quoted as holding that way, hold that you actually do not have to check the mezuzah that frequently. Other poskim say, no, you actually do have to check the mezuzah still once every 3.5 years, because once Chazal made the takana, they established that this is the din to check the mezuzah with this amount of frequency. You cannot revoke that halacha, even though the circumstances have changed. So again, ask your local Orthodox rabbi. If your mezuzah is, the klaf is irrelevant here, but if the mezuzahs are written in diol ha-netzach, which doesn't crack, which is really what they're looking for when they check a mezuzah, probably do not have to check it once every 3.5 years. Probably, there's a lot more infrequently as probably suffices. Again, check with your rabbi. Also, if you know what you're looking for, you really could check the mezuzahs yourself. You don't have to go to a sofer if you know what to look for in terms of if the mezuzah was completely checked properly by properly trained authorities when you first bought it, and you know there are no letters missing or letters that were not properly formed, all you really need to check for is if a letter got cracked or a tag got separated from the letter or a tag faded or a part of a letter faded, and you don't really need to be an expert sofer to do that. If you have concerns, then it's better to take it to a sofer, which is what most people do, because there are prati dinim. It is better, even if you don't want to do, you could rely on the checking less frequently by a sofer and check, you know, yourself once every 3.5 years and take it to a trained sofer a little bit less frequently. That might be okay. Again, some rabbanu wants you to take it to a sofer specifically every 3.5 years. Consult your halachic authority.
Well, how do you check it yourself?
In other words, you just have to know what the signs of fading and in terms of any letters being cracked or anything, any part of the letter becoming detached from the letter. Mm. Or yeah. So again, if you're not sure what you're doing, definitely better take it to a sofer. But to be able to check a mezuzah does not require full sofer's training. Strictly speaking. Some people have the practice that when they take the mezuzah to the sofer to check, they mark, and they put each mezuzah in a separate bag, and they mark down which mezuzah of the house, which doorpost of the house that mezuzah came from. This is because they're worried about horada bikdusha, making a mezuzah less holy, meaning if they move it around, let's say there's a doorway that you're not really sure if it needs a mezuzah, there's another doorway that definitely needs a mezuzah. So if you take the mezuzah from the doorway that's definitely required to have a mezuzah and put it onto the one where there's a question, that means you're making the mezuzah you're using it for a less holy purpose than it was used for previously, and that's a problem. Most poskim are not concerned with this, and the common practice, I think, is not to be concerned for this, that you just give all the mezuzahs to the sofer to check them and then put them back up in whatever order they come. There was a story, a cute story in a book I just read, where while your mezuzahs are being checked, you're considered to be osik in the mitzvah mezuzah. So the fact that your house does not have mezuzahs at this time is not necessarily problematic, because this is part of the mitzvah mezuzah, is having it checked every once in a while. So, but once you have them back, then there's really no heter, and you have to put them back up right away. So in this book, he wrote a story that there was a sofa writing that he sold the mezuzah to a very prominent rabbi. Didn't say which one. He said he brought some mezuzahs for the rabbi to check over and choose which kind he wanted. So the rabbi was very calm, leafed through all the mezuzahs, picked the one he liked. So the sofer, did the final checking it over, rolled it up, and handed it to the rabbi to put on his doorpost. As soon as the mezuzah hit the rabbi's hand, he grabbed it and ran like a small child to go put it up. He used the phrase "Ratz ki yelid katan." I thought that was kind of funny. You do also hear stories of kind of freaky stories about how people had issues in their lives, and they checked their mezuzahs and they found problems with the mezuzah dealing, that corresponded to that the issues that they were having. Okay, a little skeptical of these things. It's a little bit theologically problematic that God would punish you for not knowing that you had that there was exact thing wrong in your mezuzah that you had really no control over. But anyway, you'll hear these stories around. Again, it's a good idea to be nizhar about, to make sure that all your mezuzahs are kosher, because there is an inyan of certain shmirah, certain benefits that being careful about the mitzvah mezuzah can impart, if not as specifically and as harshly as some stories that you'll read.
Does it make a bracha when you put them back up after checking?
That's an excellent question. That's a machlokas aposkim. I consult again your local Orthodox rabbi. Right here.
Did you make a bracha when you put them first up?
Sure.
Every one of them? Or just a general bracha? Because
I think if there's no hefsek, you can use one bracha for the. Have people asked the show?
Yeah, absolutely. No, you should make a new bracha when you put it back.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But as you said, if you put five back up, you make one bracha. Mm-hmm. It's all at the same time. If it's hours apart or different days, you make a new bracha for each one.
Okay, well, I have some spares, and I took one down to check. If I put spares up, I have to make a bracha. I take one down and put another one right in its place.
Yeah, I believe you do. I believe you do. If it's a different mezuzah, I'm not 100% sure. We'll have a rabbinic conference about the issue and get back to you. That's a good. But that's an excellent midas chasidus that you do that. That's fantastic that you have spirits to put up when you're getting mezuzahs checked. But strictly halachically speaking, that's not required. Okay, checking tefillin. This is something you can and should be doing yourself on a daily basis. Before you put your tefillin on, just give it a little check over and make sure it's still square. There are a few parts of the tefillin that have to be square. One is the base part called the titura. One is the what's called the ktsitsa, the compartment in which the parshios actually rest. Those have to, their width and length or depth, depending on how you look at it, have to be equal. They're allowed to be as short or tall as necessary. The height does not have to correspond to the width and length. But it's important, and also the stitching of the gidim around the base of the titura has to be perfectly square. By perfectly square, I mean visibly square. If you take a caliper and you measure it and it's 0.01 millimeters off. It's a principle called Lo Nidna Torah LeMalachei Asharis. We're human. We can't. We just go based on how it looks to us. If it looks square. There is sometimes that the titura on the bottom gets bent. In other words, it looks like it smiles instead of being flat. It looks like it either smiles or frowns. That's something you should watch out for, and have you should have someone fix that if that happens. Again, if it's just a tiny bit and it still basically looks square, then it's probably fine. But it's something you should keep your eye out for. A little bit of warping is normal, especially if you don't have glue between the two halves of the titura, as I pushed for last time. Yeah. Then the bias is going to warp a little bit. But I think that the little bit of warping is still worthwhile for the chumra of not having glue in the middle of the titura.
It's like wear and tear on the object, is what you're really saying in a way.
No, it's not wear and tear. It's just that the bias, since it's made of actually rawhide, not leather per se, not fully tanned leather, then it actually just expands and contracts with the depending on the weather. It depends on a lot of things. The corners sometimes get rubbed, so that the corners are not really sharp and nice and square anymore. Again, if it still basically looks square, then it's okay. But if a corner is obviously banged in, sometimes if you're diving too close to a wall, that's really bad. Don't dive in too close to a wall. You could smash your tefillin into the wall, and then there goes a corner, and then it's very easily fixable for someone who knows how to do it. But you should just make sure to get it fixed. But best is not to do it in the first place. I mentioned last time there was a problem that sometimes the batim makers were not painting the batim correctly, so that the slits between the four compartments of the shel rosh did not actually correspond to the divisions on the inside. They were just like lines in the paint on the outside. Did not actually reflect the division, the actual separation point between the four batim. If you have any concerns, if the lines don't seem to line up on two sides or something looks fishy, it's kedai to show it to a sofer, and he could even stick a little spatula or knife in, like I said last time. Again, this is not something a sofer is going to charge for if he's any good. So if you just show it to says, could you look at this? Does this look problematic? Does this not look like this compartment separations are lined up? Really, these minor things should not cost money. I can't guarantee that no sofer is going to charge for it, but if you want to bring it to me over when I'm here for Shabbos, either before or after, obviously not on Shabbos, then I can do that. Then I can take a look at it for you if you have concerns. Chassidim sometimes have problems with their tefillin because they go to the mikveh every morning right before davening, and then they come right out of the mikveh, and the water causes the tefillin batim to warp. It's hard to imagine that there are many people in Highland Park who go to the mikveh every morning before davening, but if you do that, is there a men's mikveh in Highland Park?
Yes, open every day. RKJ.
Open every day? Anyway, whatever.
RKJ.
Uh-huh. So if you go to the mikveh, or usually if you shower before davening, your hair will be dry by the time you get to shul and everything, but certainly...
What hair?
But it is important to... it's very important to make sure that the tefillin batim don't get soaked with water, or sweat for that matter. If you just... played a pre-dawn game of basketball and you want to go daven now, don't put your tefillin directly on your head before drying it off. It's also some people, like, just in case their tefillin absorbed anything as they're putting away, they'll leave them to dry for a minute with the cases open after davening. It's probably not necessary, but if you have the time, then it might be worthwhile. If you have any chashoshos whatsoever about your tefillin being wet or sweaty, then you should leave them out to dry a little for a minute or two after the evening. Also, an enemy of tefillin is the hot car. There have been cases where tefillin became pustle because they were left in a hot car, and it damaged the klaf. You should not leave your tefillin in a hot car, in any room that has extreme temperatures, either hot or cold. If you really left them in a hot car for a significant period of time, then it's probably a good idea to get them checked.
It goes for airlines too.
Oh, to have them to check your tefillin under the plane.
Probably shouldn't put it in checked baggage.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
It's a very cold opening, cold or hot, the conditions. It's sitting on the runway
for hours. Right. Hey, if you have Yeah, definitely always carry your tefillin on the plane with you. Also, for security reasons, it's better
too.
Also because...
You also use them on the plane on long-distance travel, too.
Right, that's true. I knew someone who checked his tefillin out of the plane. He didn't have them checked on afterwards, but they looked okay. Again, if your tefillin are written on the lines of my waterproof mezuzahs, if you have your tefillin, your waterproof klafim inside the tefillin, then that should also protect more against heat and heat damage also. Heat and cold damage. The cases you'll be able to see. The problem is the parshas, because you can't see them unless you open the tefillin. But if there's any damage to the batim, that you'll be able to see immediately. Okay, another little sefer secret that I'm going to let out now. It's not such a secret. It's straight in the Shulchan Aruch that Mikra Adin, you do not ever have to check your tefillin if you have them. If you bought them from a reliable source and you knew they were good, and they were checked by an expert at the time of purchase, you do not ever have to check your tefillin. I'm going to give a caveat for that, which is, although many people tout that as, you never have to check your tefillin, what is this scam that, they have us check tefillin more often, or people come around to check tefillin. Really, there are a lot of times where there are psulim found in the tefillin because of cracked letters, and sometimes even when you insert the parshiyos in the Shel Rosh, you have to fold them up very small, and that could even crack the letters and you'd never notice it, when they're first inserted into the batim. So many poskim do recommend, even if you're not planning to check your tefillin periodically, that a couple years, at most, after you bought them, it's kedai to check them just to make sure everything is in order. I also think that it could be very worthwhile to check them more frequently because, as I mentioned in the first year, the ink nowadays is different from the one that was used in the times of the Gemara. It turns red, it cracks much more easily, and the klaf is also different. The klaf is much harder and less absorbent. It doesn't suck in the ink as well, so that could cause the ink to crack on the surface of the klaf. So it definitely is not at all a waste of time or money to have your tefillin checked with contemporary conditions. You could argue also that, Chazal had made a takana, you never had to check your tefillin, but it is worthwhile, especially if you have tefillin with contemporary klaf and dyo. I do think it is worthwhile to check your tefillin periodically. It doesn't have to be twice every 7 years like a mezuzah, but I don't know, every 10, 15 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. It is probably worthwhile. Again, if you have written in Diola Netzach, or especially with the Gemara-style klaf, you're much better off in that respect, because they're gonna last much longer, it's not going to turn red, it's not going to flake, etc. Also, you do have to check it even according to the strict halacha if there is something wrong that happens to it. Like I said, if you left it in a hot car, or you are wearing your tefillin in a rainstorm, something like that, they got wet, or something along those lines. Also, incidentally, the whole issue of checking tefillin is actually a machlokes tanoim. It's not that it comes out of nowhere. Again, we paskin in a machlokes tanoim, it's then you could say there's no midas chasidus to worry about the other shita and tanoim. I'm saying the whole issue of checking tefillin has never been clear cut in Jewish history, even though you could open up the Shulchan Aruch and it will tell you that you never have to check your tefillin. In one of the not so frequent places where in normative halacha we actually paskin like the Kabbalah, there is a Zohar it says in the Zohar that the kesher on the shel yad has to touch the tefillin itself. If you wrap your tefillin out, in general, you won't have that problem because the pulling action pulls the yud kesher, it's called the yud kesher, towards the tefillin itself, so you won't really have a problem. The problem is, if you wrap your tefillin in, like most Ashkenazim, then your pulling action actually pulls the yud away from the bias. So some people have the yud tied to the tefillin with some sort of string, A lot of people use a gid, the same string they use to sew the tefillin up themselves. That's just for convenience, because that's the string most ofrim have on hand. But you, strictly speaking, you could use anything to, as long as you don't make a chatzitza, a separation between the tefillin bias and your arm. So that is one thing you should be careful about. But again, if somehow your string breaks and your yud isn't touching your tefillin, that you don't, you should still put them on. You can still make a bracha. That's this inyan is to have it touching is really al pi kabbalah. It's not strictly speaking halachic. That's more. That's another. I don't think it says that explicitly in the Zohar. If I'm not, maybe some people interpret the Zohar that way, but again, that's another level in the Kabbalistic practice. Halachically speaking, that's certainly not required.
The Shoyan Tefillin is a case. A lot of people, like myself, keep it in the case. Is that very protective to do it that way?
The plastic thing?
Yes.
Not the case that you keep it in, the one that just.
Yes.
That just protects the corners from getting rubbed out. For example, if you put your sleeve over it and it's rubbing against your tefillin all the time, then if you didn't have that hard plastic case, then it would rub out.
That's a very good idea, then, to have the case on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people are makbid to take the case off when you make the bracha, because you don't want... I'm not sure exactly why. It's a whole Indian that I don't have time to discuss now, but it's probably okay, especially nowadays, that they make a hole in it. There's usually a hole in the top of the plastic case,
yes.
So you could see the actual tefillin itself through the case, and it's probably not a problem to leave it on at all times.
Right.
But if you want to be machmir, then you could take it off when you make the bracha. But you raised an interesting point also, which is that when you have cloth rubbing the tefillin, the corners could get rubbed out, so sometimes people have their talus way over their heads, and actually rubs the corners of the tefillin shel rosh. So that's also inadvisable. Unless you have some hakpada, some people, and when they daven shmon esrei, they put the talus all the way down over their faces. But unless you have such hakpada, better to keep the talus not touching the tefillin at all, farther back on your head. Another thing to make sure about when maintaining your tefillin is you have to make sure that the batim and the ritzuos are black. This is more important for the ritzuos, the straps, than for the batim, because the ritzuos, everyone agrees, have to be black as a halacha Moshe Misinai, whereas the batim, it's a machlokas whether they have to be black or they could be any color. We try to be concerned for the opinion that the batim also have to be black. So if it needs any touching up, there are different markers, or there's a little thing that looks like nail polish that you could find in your local Judaica stores that have good hechsherim. And you could use that to touch up your ritzuos and batim if there are any spots that are not black. It's important to say, before you do the actual touching up, you should say l'shem kedushas tefillin. Because when you do anything that's required halachically and for the tefillin, like there being black is a halacha Moshe Misinai, then you have to do it lishma with a proper intent for that mitzvah. There are poskim who say that as long as the majority is black, then it's okay. But we try not to rely on that. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't really like that. He says that. Really, the entire thing should be completely black. The width of the resua has to be the width of a barley kernel, which is, somebody asked last time, I think, which is between 9 and 11 millimeters. So if you have to make sure that through the entire length of the resua, the width is no less than about a centimeter.
Does that have to be consistent?
If it narrows a little, it's okay. It just shouldn't get less than millimeters.
It's wide and it goes like, it stretches and it gets...
You mean it stretches to the extent that there are portions that are less than a...
Not consistent with...
Yeah, that could be a problem. That could be a problem, yeah. If you could easily, if it's like a little bent or something, you could easily bend it back into shape, then there is more room to say that's okay. But if the ritzua by no means has a width of 9 millimeters anymore, then that could be a problem, or so it should probably be replaced. I remember last time I forgot a story in the middle, so I just remembered it now, so I'll I have a friend in Israel, not my age, considerably older, who is a dealer in Stam and is a very unique personality. He's a real brisker. So he says, you should expect Ritzuas to last 2 years. I was like, okay. Yeah, 2 years. Okay, I don't think you need to follow that, but I, you know.
Just feeling custom, right?
What?
More
than you do, probably. Yeah, not all day long, but
that wears it.
Yeah, Zilberman's. Yes,
Zoras. I can't pronounce words.
Yeah.
People would wear the tefillin all day, but now because it's a little harder, you just wear it for chakras.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. But there are groups in Israel that where they do wear it, continue to wear tefillin all day long.
Yes, they do. I went with Stop. I saw in there.
Yeah. Yeah, they're interesting people if you get to know them. But ritzuas do last more than 2 years, but, you know, I've had people who came to me to replace their ritzuas, you know, they're whatever, 25, 30. They said, oh, I've had these ritzuas since my bar mitzvah, like, they probably don't need to replace them, right? And if they're in excellent condition, you don't need to replace them, but they're asking like it's strange that they would have to replace a piece of leather that they wrap around their body every day after 20 years of use almost. It's not so unreasonable to replace your ritzuas every 10, 20 years. It's not crazy. Again, if they stay in excellent condition, you know, fine, great, good for you. The length of the ritzuas. The ritzua shel yad, I haven't seen anyone who ritzua shel yad was too short, but strictly speaking, the ritzua just has to be long enough that you can wrap it around your arm, you know, tie it tightly, then extend it to your middle finger and wrap three times, and that's it. So that's much, much shorter than most people have. We like to wrap around the arm several times. But that shouldn't be a problem. If your ritzuas for some reason are too long, then it's better not to cut them, because that's also an issue of harada biktusha, because, like I said about the mezuzahs, that they were used for a holy purpose, and now you're chopping part of it off, so that part is no longer going to be used for a holy purpose anymore.
When you wear the shel yad, it should be adjacent to your heart, approximately around here.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we're about to discuss placement of telemazos, so we'll okay. We'll get there. Yeah, everyone is really guessing what I'm going to talk about.
One question.
Sure.
On replacing parts of the tefillin.
Yeah.
Now, I don't use it, but I have my great-grandfather's tefillin that was probably from Russia.
Okay.
Now, it was always kept in a bag. It was always... Now, which parts can be replaced before, I don't know if I would bury the whole thing, I might just keep it, you know, in a safe place. Which parts can be replaced to be used?
Why do you know it needs to be replaced?
No, I'm just saying, have it checked, which, if necessary, because I noticed there's some flaking of the ritzuas, the leather.
Any part that's still good. The ritzuas, by now, would probably not be so good, but...
They can be replaced.
They could be replaced. Right. The batim, if the parshios are good, the batim could be replaced. The only problem might be that a lot of times in Europe they had very big tefillin, and they were made of thinner skin, so the compartments in the shel rosh were very big. So a lot of times those parshios that are very large will not fit in contemporary tefillin batim. But there's no way to tell unless you have them checked and each part examined separately. I was talking about the length of the ritzuah. So for the shel rosh, the right side is supposed to be longer than the left side. Again, better to adjust it before you start wearing it, so you don't have to cut parts of the ritzuah off after you've already started wearing it.
Bless you.
There are different shitas about how long it should be, but normally the one shita is that the right side should go to your navel and the left side should go to your chest. One sheet is that the right side should go to your mila, and the right and the left side should go to your navel. People aren't so medactic on these things. They make sure the right side, kabbalistically, is supposed to be longer than the left, because...
What area is the mila?
Mila?
Yes.
The genitals.
Okay.
So, fine. Now we'll discuss placement of tefillin. So, yeah. I wasn't actually, we're making good time today. I wasn't actually planning to get to this. But good, we'll have more time next time to do our arts and crafts workshop.
Okay.
It's fine. So, one thing about the placement of the Tefillin Shel Rosh is that most people have the Tefillin Shel Rosh too large. It's a very, very common problem. As most people know by now, because everyone has posters everywhere declaring this halakha, because it was such a big problem, you know, 100 years ago, that the front part of the tefillin can't go below the front of your hairline, or for some people where the hairline used to be. So in other words, where the original hairline was, or is, whatever. But the back is actually supposed to be higher than most people think. The back is actually, the kesher is supposed to be centered on the bump in the back of your skull. Most people do it much lower. That's what I found. That really, it should be it's hard to feel exactly where your skull ends and your neck starts, but really the entire kesher is supposed to be on parallel to where your actual skull is, as opposed to any part of the neck. The Mishnah Berurah says that b'di'eved, you're yotzei as long as you put the kesher on a place that has hair and doesn't go below on a part of your neck that has no hair. But really, like, it could be even higher, theoretically, but let's say the top half of the kesher should be above the bump, and the bottom kesher should be below the bottom half of the kesher should be below the bump, should be centered just around there, around the bump. The shell rose should be tight. Also, which a lot of some people walk around with it very loose, because the shell rose, the way you tie it, doesn't need completely tying like the shell rose does, but it needs to be snug. Needs to be tight on your head. Again, part of the issue with having it too large. Yeah.
Does the ritzuos stretch over time?
So yeah, they'll stretch and break in.
So then,
like a baseball glove.
Lower and lower too. And that gets getting checked, or
especially getting haircuts too.
That's true. Absolutely. Yeah. Haircuts and there are a lot of factors that could make your tefillin fit slightly differently on different days. But you know, it's a good idea to have someone look at it periodically and make sure it's the right. Unless you could do it yourself, you could look in a mirror, look at the back of your head, and two mirrors. A little complicated. It's very easy to readjust the knot. Yeah, if you have, there are lots of books that describe how to do it. It's a good skill to know how to do. It's really not that difficult. The shel yad should be on the bicep muscle. It should be tilted towards your body. In other words, a lot of people, also I see this very frequently, that it's you know, sort of over here. Really, it's supposed to be more like over here, because it's supposed to be keneged halev. It should be that when you relax your arm, you should feel the tefillin hitting your chest.
Yeah.
Close to where your heart is. There is an issue regarding how much of the bicep is appropriate for placing the tefillin shel yad. The Shulchan Aruch quotes one Rishon, the Hagos Smak, I believe it is, who says that the only acceptable place on the bicep for putting your shel yad is the midpoint of the bone that goes from your elbow to your shoulder.
Right there.
Right, what?
So
you have a little bit more than half the bicep muscle on the bottom to put the shel yad. This requirement is not mentioned in the vast majority of the Rishonim. So even though this is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, there are many people who are not makpid on this, that they put the entire... they consider the entire bicep to be an appropriate place for hanachas tefillin. There is actually, someone showed me, there is, I think, Rabbeinu Chananel, don't quote me on that, but there is a somewhat obscure Rishon who actually says it should be bedavka on the top part of the bicep because it's closer to your heart. Again, if you can get it and on the bottom half, but still make sure it's on the bicep and not going lower than the bicep, then fine. But if you, more important, it should be on the bicep itself than be on the bottom half of the where the bone goes. Some people, for this reason, for their bar mitzvah boys, as I mentioned last time, they get a smaller shel yad. So, because that for sure, a normal sized tefillin is almost for sure not going to fit on the bottom half of the bone in a bar mitzvah boy. Also, one thing that's commonly neglected is that the loop through which the ritzua runs when you tighten the tefillin on your arm should be very small, actually. A lot of people have it very large, but it really should be small because the tying is supposed to be as close to your heart as possible and is not supposed to be, over here, which if you have a very large loop, you might end up tightening over here. It's also kedai to be makbid on this if you wrap out and the loop is actually on the opposite side of the tefillin. Even though it's not next to your heart, still the poskim say it's better to have a smaller loop because there's an added advantage that it's tighter and considered to be a better kiyum of kshira, actually tying the tefillin on your arm. Any questions? Okay. Placement of mezuzahs. A doorway that's chayiv in mezuzah is at least 10 tefachim tall, which is about, I didn't even calculate it. Chaznish is a meter, but I think the other one is smaller.
Tefachim is a fist, just like that.
Tefach is actually four thumb widths, not actually a fist per se, but it has to be a minimum of 10 tefachim. Most people's doorways in their homes are much more than 10 tefachim, so it's not really an issue. It has to have what's called a tzuras ha-pesach, which means two doorposts and a mashkof, a lintel on top.
What's a mashkof, a lintel?
What?
What is a mashkof, a lintel?
Mashkof or a lintel? Yeah, lintel in English.
What are those things?
A lintel is the top doorpost.
Okay.
So it has to have three parts, two side bars and a top bar. Okay. So if it doesn't have that, it's just like one room goes straight into another room and there's no obvious... Like that, yeah. Something like that, where there's no drop down in the ceiling that makes an obvious lintel, then that doorway, as appears you you know, is not chayiv in mezuzah. In arch is chayiv in mezuzah. There's complex calculations of how exactly to calculate where in the arch it should go, and I don't have time to discuss it right now. But if you want, we can discuss it later. You can email me or whatever. I can give you more guidance. The minimum size of the room that's chayiv in mezuzah is 4 by 4 amos, which, again, different calculations. I'll just throw in my little bit here that it seems that according to archaeological evidence, the Chaznish was not correct, so the smaller shear is actually the one to go by. So maybe that's more of... Most people say that you shouldn't make a bracha unless you... The room is 4 by 4 amos according to the Chazon Ish, because you want to be machmer for making a bracha, but again, I'm not asking a Orthodox rabbi, but it could be that you don't need to be choshesh for that. You could even make a bracha on the smaller share. Again, it depends if you admit archaeological evidence in Talacha. It's a whole sugya. The mezuzah should be on the upper third of the doorway. Again, you don't have to take out a measuring tape per se, but if you want to, you can. If you should estimate where on the doorway approximately is the top third of the doorway, put the mezuzah on the bottom end of that. But again, it shouldn't be mamish on the bottom end, because better it should be somewhere in the top third than drop down into the middle third. It has to be more than a tefach from the top of the doorway. It's usually not a problem. Most poskim hold that if the doorway is very tall, you should put the mezuzah at shoulder height. Also, something that usually not necessarily followed is that the mezuzah is supposed to go in the outer tefach of the doorway. Sometimes you put it in the middle of the doorway because it looks nicer, but it's really supposed to go on the outer tefach of the doorway. Some poskim say it doesn't apply indoors because the whole point of putting it on the outside tefach of the doorway is to give as maximum protection as possible. So it's like if you put it farther in the doorway, then you know the first part when you first walk in, it won't be as protected because it won't have a mezuzah. It's still better to be careful about this, to put the mezuzah in the outer tefach of the doorway.
The outer tefach, that brings up the, also the question of which side it goes on. When you go in the room or out of the room.
Right.
I guess if it goes on the right, then it goes further in, and if it goes on the left, it goes further out. I mean,
right, I mean, whatever side you put it on, so it will be on the first tefach of that side.
It's supposed to be on the right side.
It's supposed to be on the right side. You have to determine, again, very complex. Should bring Rabbi Medanek to your house when you first build it or buy it or whatever, and he can point out all the doorways that are chayav mezuzah with. It should go on the left or right. Usually it goes according to the most of the traffic in the house, whether they go into a room this way or that way. It would go on the right of the way the room is most commonly entered. It's a general principle, but you can't go into details, unfortunately.
Is the right side the reason why? Because it's the holy side? Because we always look at the right side as being the holier side.
That's a great that's a great idea, but that's not really what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that really it's because of derech bi'ascha, because most people are right-footed, so when they start walking, you put your right foot first, so you're first going into the room sort of on the right side.
Gotcha.
You only make a bracha if the doorway has an actual door attached to it, because there is a minority opinion in the Rishonim that a doorway is only chayav in mezuzah if there is an actual door. Although most poskim don't hold that way, we still will only make a bracha if the doorway has a door.
We're supposed to make a bracha every time we like go into a home with a mezuzah. Is that what you're saying?
No. I mean that if you're putting mezuzahs in your house, then if you're when you're fixing the a mezuzah, gotcha. Then it only goes on a door. You only make a bracha on a doorway with a door. Who here's heard of Rabbi Abadi from Lakewood? Very colorful fellow. It's interesting shittas in Imsak Halacha. He's fond of pointing out that most of the time a person's front door will not be chayav in mezuzah because it will lead into a small hallway, which or a small room, which is less than 4x4 amos. The reasoning is somewhat questionable because sometimes the mezuzah, if it's a room leading into another room, even if it's not a proper full shear. In any case, the minhag is to put a mezuzah on the front door no matter what because it's a little bit of a Maris Zion. People are going to think you don't have a mezuzah. If you really hold it's not chayiv. Right, you shouldn't say bracha.
You put up more than one mezuzah at a time, so.
Right.
You can manage to do it. Yeah.
If you're a very strong Rabbi Abadi chassid, so maybe put up an empty case or something, just so people.
An empty case.
So what kind of case should you get? There are opaque cases and there are clear cases. There is a preference in halacha expressed for clear cases, so you can actually see the mezuzah. Makes more of a dramatic effect if you could see the scroll itself. However, if they're going to be, for example, if you're going to change baby's diapers or something in front of the mezuzah, if there's going to be something slightly unpalatable taking place in front of the mezuzah, then it's better to have an opaque case. It's also...
Is there a difference in the cost factor between the two cases? Or are they pretty much the same?
Pretty much the same. I mean, you don't need a fancy, expensive case, but... Plain clear. Just the what?
Test tube with a cork.
Oh, sure. Why not? There are some people who are makbid. The Vilna Gaon was reportedly makbid not to have any chatzitza between the mezuzah and the actual doorpost. People point out that it's very, the Chaznish points out that it's very strange because the Gemara already talks about putting the mezuzah inside a tube and then fixing it to the doorpost. But in any case, according to this opinion, you would not be allowed to use saran wrap, or you wouldn't be allowed to use a case with a back on it. It would have to be, the mezuzah would have to be touching the doorpost. Most people are not makbid on that. Seems to be that the Gemara is seems to be the basic interpretation of the Gemara that you don't have to be makbid on that. If you want to, again, if you have a waterproof mezuzah, it might be more kedai to be makbid on that than a non-waterproof, because a non-waterproof, you're going to want to wrap it in saran wrap so it lasts longer. Ashkenazim have the practice that we put the mezuzah slightly slanted because there's a machlokas, ostensibly, not exactly clear what the machlokas is, but it's different for a different time. But it's purportedly a machlokas between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam as to whether the mezuzah should be straight up or should be slanted. Most Rishonim go like Rashi, that's why Sfardim put the mezuzah straight, they don't slant it at all. The Vilna Gaon also did that, he just passed like Rashi, he didn't care what Rabbeinu Tam said. But in any case, there's a difference of opinion between the postgame whether you should have it mamish slanted, like at a 45 degree angle, to be a real compromise between the opinion of Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, or just have it very slightly slanted, just as a sort of deference to Rabbeinu Tam, even though really we paskin like Rashi. That's usually the recommendation of the postgame, just have the mezuzah very, very slightly slanted. Shouldn't be...
In which direction?
The top should be going in. Top should be going in.
And how critical is that if you're seeing a mezuzah that's not pointing into the room, but say out of the room?
I don't think it's makif. I'm not
100%.
The whole slanting thing is not makif at all. If you have a doorpost that's very thin and you can't slant it, so we just put it straight, like Rashi. I don't think it's makif. You should fix it if you can, but I have to look. If you email me or something, I'll look it up and I'll get back to you. But I don't think it's makif. If there's no room in the mezuzah in the doorpost for a mezuzah, it's like you have a door that swings or something, and it's going to whack the mezuzah if you put it on the doorpost where it's supposed to go. So the best option is to carve a little hole for it into the doorpost and stick the mezuzah into the doorpost. If that's impractical, then you can. Ashkenazim, I think, only can put the mezuzah on the front of the doorpost. That's very not ideal, though. Better to dig in if at all possible. I believe that Sfardim will not do that under any circumstances. Again, I have to look it up some more.
Should mezuzahs be put in basements?
Yeah, absolutely.
They should be put in basements.
Yeah, people live in basements. They're part of your house. Absolutely. Now, the Shaila more would be in terms of porches and walk-in closets where you have an issue. I think most people do not put a mezuzah on walk-in closets, if I'm not mistaken.
I took Mark Schwarzberg for a tour of my house.
Yeah, he told you to put?
And he told us to put one on. It's a big enough room.
Okay, right, because it's... Right, the question is which direction you should put it in, because if you can walk in the closet and it's not 4x4 amos, then you walk back into the room, some posts can say you should put it on the right side coming back into the room. Again...
if you have a closed-in
porch. The room is bigger than size, anyway.
Oh, the closet was bigger than 4x4? Oh, so for sure, okay.
What if you have a closed-in
porch? So for sure it's high, yeah.
People have outside porches, it's a closed-in porch. What
if it's
closed-in porch?
If it's enclosed, then it's high, and this is just like any other room. But if it's not closed in, so it's a shiloh, whether you put it in going out of the house into the porch or going in from the porch to the house, I think the normal minhag is to put it going out to going into the porch, if I'm not mistaken. The rabbi agrees with me.
You're saying it's a room, then that would be the key.
What?
You're entering a room, so obviously you would...
Yeah, maybe.
That makes sense.
A garage is chayiv, unless it's completely like not attached to your house and only used for the car. Then some poskim say that it should not. There's not chayiv in mezuzah.
When you say the garage, are you referring to the door between the house and the garage?
No, that for sure is chayiv.
The sliding door.
Yeah.
The garage door.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Also, there's an interesting thing that many people are not aware of, which is that if an apartment building is mostly inhabited by Jews, then the front door of the apartment building requires a mezuzah. It should probably be written in accordance with the minhag of most of the people who live there. Other people say different things, but that's the basic halacha. I actually heard Rabbi Simon quoted Rabbi David Feinstein that he said he gave some reason that we're not nizhar in this to put mezuzahs on apartment buildings where most of the inhabitants are Jewish, but it's not the pashut pshat. The simple halacha is certainly that if there is an apartment building where most of the residents are Jewish, then you should affix a mezuzah to the front door. Everyone b'shutfus. Everyone is
Not the owner of the apartment.
No, is there? It's the.
Well, it might be a co-op, or it might be actually rented apartments.
In which case,
the owner of the apartment building owns that space.
Right, but that apartment owner of the apartment, you're not chayef to put a mezuzah on a house you don't use. If you own a house in Kalamazoo and you don't live there, and it's a chovas hadar, it's a mezuzah is for the people who live there. So the people who live in that apartment building have to get together, and really, all the people together are being mevatel mitzvah. if they don't affix a mezuzah to the front of the apartment building door. That concludes the dry halachic portion of these of this shiurim. What? A shul, strictly speaking, is not chayav mezuzah, but we are noach to put on since people learn here and they sometimes eat and
place of business.
Place of business is if you people they recommend you should put one because you have something you eat there. You, but strictly speaking, if you only use it for business, I don't think it's really chayav.
Okay.
Again, if you have any more questions at all, please feel free to email me at any time. Next week will be the practical portion of this year. Yeah, sure.
What if you drop it?
Oh, fasting, you mean?